Welcome once again to another fantastic episode of the Business Creators Radio Show. We help business creators like you win at the game of business and marketing so you can thrive from your intersection of your brilliance and your passion and make a difference for your community, market, and audience. Please take a moment and visit our website, www.businesscreatorsradioshow.com. You'll find hundreds of episodes covering a breadth and depth of topics relevant to you as a business creator, and links to subscribe via your favorite network so you get fresh episodes delivered straight to you. And now, here's today's episode. Let's get started.
My name is Adam Homey. I'm your host, and I am honored by your wise decision to tune in and invest in yourself today. Here at the Business Creators Radio Show, we invite you as the listener to imagine yourself sitting in on a private mastermind meeting where you're looking for those aha moments that can bring you closer to serving from your intersection of your brilliance and your passion and possibly change your entire trajectory when you receive the answers to questions you did not even know that you needed to ask. Today, I am coming to you from my sumptuous apartment here in Las Vegas, Nevada, known to some as the hottest city in America. And we are going to have a conversation about redefining time and redefining your life. So do you find yourself wishing for more time in your life? You've heard, well, everybody has the same 24 hours in a day. Yeah, that's all well and good. But the fact is, we all have the same amount of time distributed evenly between us. Yet in today's world, many of us have fallen into the trap of viewing time as a limited resource, a commodity that can only be traded, which leads us to that sense of scarcity that leads to forced all-nighters. Not the type of all-nighter where you're so excited about your work that you go into a trance-like state of focus, and then you look up and wonder when the hell the sun came up, but the type where you're dragging yourself through it. So what we're going to do here today with our guest, who I'm going to introduce you to in just a second, is we will delve into the perception of time and explore this common unresourceful time mindset. And when we have time, we'll also address some of the dysfunctional relationships with time that contribute to stress, busyness, overwhelming our lives, leading to significant health problems, among other things. This is not only for you, this is also for me, because this is a challenge that I deal with frequently, is there never seems to be enough time in the day. I can never outsource enough. I can never leverage enough. There's always, always, always all this stuff, and like, when does it ever end? So today's guest, his name is Daniel Lawson. So from corporate strategist to founder of a unique lifestyle brand, Daniel's journey, which he's going to tell you about in a moment, from creating Parallax Apparel to Parallax Transformations, charts a daring path of redefining success. So he pathed the adventurepreneur coaching niche, blending adventure and entrepreneurship to spark profound transformations. As the author of Three Toxic Lies That Keep You Busy, Stressed, and Unfulfilled, Daniel challenges hustle culture norms, which is great because I'm not a hustler, and our perception of time, using his unique approach to empower high-performing CEOs and entrepreneurs to confront their mediocrity, and in doing so, find their edge in the relentless pursuit of having it all. Beyond coaching, Daniel delivers transformative retreats on global paradises, shattering paradigms and instilling new perspectives, helping others redefine their realities. His journey underlines his distinctive authority as a guide in a relentless pursuit of holistic success. And if that sounds like a mouthful, it certainly is. I got to tell you that I'm not sure I'm worthy to be present in this man's space. And this is my show and my episode. But anyway, Daniel Lawson, come on in. The weather's fine.
Hello. Thank you so much. What an introduction. Thank you. And of course, Adam, you're more than worthy. Everyone here is more than worthy. I'm so pumped for this call. Thank you for having me.
All right. So I read off the official bio, and now what we like to do before we dive in, you gave me some pretty interesting things you want to make sure that we cover when you and I chatted in the green room earlier is before we do that, let's peel back the curtain a little bit. And I want you to tell us a bit in your own words, something of your journey that's brought you to where you are today, serving business creators from your intersection of your brilliance and your passion as described.
Yeah. Oh, there's so many parts that we could dive into here. I think it's staying on the theme and the concept of time and relationship with time.
There's two big, really big parts for that for me. It came through the realization of coaching, probably a few years ago now, coaching many other business entrepreneurs. And as I like to call it back there, it was adventrepreneurship, and realizing and discovering, well, we all, and I say that with a huge generalization, have a poor relationship with time. And I realized that it's not really time is not the problem at all. And when I started reflecting on my own journey, it came from a place of childhood and realizing before I was old enough to have any real significant problems in life, I'm talking at 10, 12, 15, going to high school, those kind of years, to realize, wow, I was having time troubles back there. I felt like there wasn't enough time. I was always running out of time. And as I grew older and there was real challenges like adulthood and taking care of life and taking care of business and taking care of other people in my life, that this relationship with time started really compounding and really starting to get quite challenging. I still don't have it figured out now totally. Starting business, it really got challenging there, as you can imagine, and probably the listeners here as well. As you start a business, time seems to compress. And it was around the start of my journey, I was moving from affiliate marketing space, building my first real business for myself, which was Parallax Apparel. It was a water sports apparel brand, Parallax Apparel. And I started, I found this word parallax. And for those, most people don't know what it means. Maybe if you're in engineering or photography, web design, we use this word parallax. And basically it describes the perception of when you change your perspective on objects, the object appears to change. And I was like, wow, this is a really great metaphor for the way that we live life. And when I change my perspective on reality and on life, well, we can create different opportunities. We can create a whole new world. I started realizing that it's almost like everything is just made up. Everything's just a concept. And what if we change the concept the way we're living? So I built my whole brand around that. That's Parallax Apparel. I got into coaching at that stage. As I say, it was adventrepreneurship, tying adventure and entrepreneurship together, and just redefining the way that I saw life. And then that came through quite heavily in my coaching and my mentoring. And that led into this whole concept of the way that I was perceiving time to be. And I could rewrite it through a different lens of belief that was much more certain. Are these beliefs true? I don't know. Yes, maybe, but do they serve? Hugely. It's transformed my life and many of the people that I've worked with.
That's great. So what we want to do here is I may go through these somewhat in order because you developed quite a flow here for our conversation. We may throw in some extra points here as well, but let's start with the map that you showed me earlier and let's just kind of follow it. So as I mentioned, time seems to be a universal challenge for many, whether you're in the corporate world, whether you're in entrepreneurship, even in your personal life, anywhere we look. So you mentioned a little bit about how time has been a challenge for you in your life. So what I'm looking for is, I guess, a couple of instances that really brought this home for you to realize that the construct of time has been in opposition to your trajectory rather than facilitating it.
Yeah, it's a really good question. There's so many instances, and I sense that anyone listening to this will be able to target them very specifically, depending on what's important in our lives as individuals, right? When it comes to time and the conversation around time, what I seem to notice is where it seems like we're lacking in time for what's most important in our lives. And as I started diving into that, I'm like, why is that? If we've all got the same amount of time in the day available to us, why aren't we just taking care of those things that are most important? For whatever reason, and we can dive into that in a little bit later, if we're not taking care of what's most important in our lives, it starts creating internal stresses, right? So it's the feeling of constantly feeling overwhelmed or stressed, or can't relax, or lacking a presence, or not being focused. Maybe it looks like being exhausted and close to facing burnout, or being burnt out. There's symptoms of not saying no to requests or offers or opportunities and feeling guilty for myself and not taking care of someone else that really needs help, missing time with those that you care about, whether it's kids or family or the partner, not having enough time. It feels like lacking success or feeling isolated or alienated. There's so many different ways it plays out. For myself, I didn't have enough time when I was building my business. I had all the time in the world for my business, and I was so incredibly passionate about it. It was a really great, and I say this now with the awareness, but it was really a really great distraction from life, because I was able to just dive into business and work like 12 hours, 15 hours, 17 hours a day for like a week, 2 weeks straight. And then I'd come up, and it was almost like coming up for a breath of fresh air to go, like, life is still happening around me here. And I'd try to reconnect with that date that I went on 2 weeks earlier. And she would say, like, what's going on, Daniel? Like, you haven't returned any of my messages. You just ignored me. You totally ghosted me, and you expect you want to hang out now. I discovered it's not really how people wanted to do dating. So my relationship life sucked. My friendship sucked. I just realized I was so lonely. And it took me a long time to figure out that, like, this inner loneliness and this relationship at time was interconnected. But it was all just a distraction from what was really going on.
Yeah. And I've heard that story so many times, that somebody had, say, a date, for instance, and it just took them a while to get back to the person. And the most common thing that I hear when people tell me these stories is they were just so spent, they didn't know what to say.
Yeah, that's true. It's so true. We invest so much time in thing that, I don't know, for me, it felt like what I was supposed to be doing and putting off what it is that I wanted into the future. Like, if I work hard now, one day I'll have enough time, or one day I'll have enough money, or one day something will change and I'll be able to enjoy it then. And what I grew to realize is what doesn't change today is not going to change tomorrow. And no matter how much I keep focusing on what I'm doing now, if it's not working for now, it's not really going to work in the future. Now, that's not to say don't build your business and don't invest in your future. I'm not saying that at all.
Right.
But strategies of what is giving the outcome and the experience of life now, if we don't change it and really make an impact to creating the experience and like the emotional experience, the time experience, or however it is that we want to live our lives now, it's not going to change in the future, because it's all a strategy. And the more we practice a different way, the more ingrained that pattern becomes for most people. And probably I imagine most people listening to this, they've already got hard ingrained patterns. It's going to take a bit of effort to retrain, redevelop, get onto a new strategy to create experience in life that it is that they want to experience, or that we want to experience, I think, universally as humans.
Yeah. Yeah. I couldn't really agree more. So, you know, contrary to popular belief, and I mentioned this, you know, the whole thing about everybody has the same 24 hours, no matter of how you use it, you love to say that time is actually not the most precious resource. So what has you going against the grain on this one?
Yeah, well, this is it can be very controversial, I guess. As I say, it's just a belief tried on. You know, categorically, I'm going to say, of course, I'm not going to say that we're going to all live forever. I think that's ridiculous. A lot of people try to mismatch, you know, what I'm about to say. But inviting someone to try it on, to think, you know, if we consider time is money, time is a commodity, time is a resource. It means that we need to trade it, you know, time for money, your time for something else. And then we obsess over spending it or investing it efficiently. This is the common narrative that you see. I think it's really ingrained in hustle culture and being wise about the time. And going back to my story before about parallax, I love to challenge things. It's like what comedians do. They take the mundane or the easily referenced thing in life, and they bring attention to it, they switch it around a little bit, point to it, laugh, and then suddenly it becomes a really funny joke. I kind of like to do that just for my own entertainment or tests, if you like, and going, well, what if we take something that's so widely accepted, point at it, reverse it, change it around, play with it, and see what happens. And of course, most of the time, either nothing happens or we get a different outcome that's equally not as serving or whatever. When it came to time, I was like, well, what if time became an experience? It's not a resource, but time became an experience.
Okay.
And it could become a measurement of wealth. We would no longer be earning money, but would be then measuring the quality of the time that we've experienced.
And that's so, interesting. Go ahead.
Yeah. So the truth is, and what I start realizing is, you can't create more time. Time is, it is finite. When we've got this idea of time is money, well, and time is a commodity, it becomes a scarcity mindset. You can't create more time, true, but you can decide what to remove from it. Time is the ultimate equalizer. It discriminates against no one. You know, it's not who has, it's those who have the healthiest, most abundant relationship with it that will get the most from the experience of life.
Yeah.
And so we start creating these different concepts of life. What if it's an experience? Okay, so if time is experience, how is it that I want to be experiencing my time? Not trading, experiencing it. And it starts going down the path of going, well, what can I change and influence right now based on how it is that I want to feel? And so a lot of people that don't have enough time say, well, I don't want to be busy. And I don't want to be stressed, for example. And I'm feeling distracted. And I'm going, okay, so if you don't want that, what would you want instead? And they're like, well, I'd love to have more presence. I'd love to have more focus. I'd love to feel more calm. I'd love to be just happier and playful. I'd love to, you know, almost what they're sharing previously sounds like a weight. It sounds like a pressure. It sounds like a heaviness within them. And they're just so craving to let that go.
Yeah.
And I know for myself, as I went through really unpacking this, I felt that weight lift when I decided, well, I'm not going to trade my time. I'm going to experience my time differently. And I'm going to start intentionally experiencing it the way that I want to experience it. So we can still work hard. The way that this looks for me is I go 100% all in on what it is that I'm doing.
Yeah.
Because when we talk about, you mentioned before, the hustle culture, you're not a hustler. I would probably anticipate and think that I'm sure you work hard, you put in the hours, you know, you show up to serve and build your business. And you still don't need to be a hustler to do that. Because what we can bring is a presence and a focus. Do what it is that we need to do, whether it's in business, and it could be for an hour, it could be for a day. And then once it's done, turn it off and then be present with the next thing. It requires boundaries. It really requires boundaries and knowing what it is that's valuable to us. But I can close my laptop, then I can go and spend time with my partner. And I turn my phone, like, I turn my phone on airplane mode often, so I'm not getting the notifications. So I'm 100% present to, and say, if I had kids, I'd do the same with my kids or whatever it is that I'm doing. Now I get to experience my time the way that I want to experience it, the way and in the way that I want to feel. Now, there's a whole other body of work for people, you know, within time, but I think within life is how to experience emotions and how it is that we want to feel. That's a big part of it. And for most people, they don't either know how to feel or it's uncomfortable feeling these new feelings of calmness, presence, because they want to revert back to that old strategy of being busy. And it seems strange, but stress is comfortable for most people that are too busy.
Yeah. Yeah. I certainly can relate to that. And what I mean by I'm not a hustler is like, some people describe it as entrepreneurial fever. I can go in bursts, but I can't do it for long periods of time. I'm just not built that way. And I found that a lot of people are like that. We become entrepreneurs because we're largely an entrepreneurial audience because, among many things, we all have our own reasons, but one that shows up a lot is I don't want to be assigned to an office to work from 9 to 5 Monday through Friday with my hour for lunch and 2 15-minute breaks and be expected to be at my best during that time period. As entrepreneurs and creatives, it happens when it happens. We focus on When's the deadline? How do I meet that deadline? We're not focused on how much productivity do we do in 1 hour. We focus on what is the value of the final result. And so already there, you're redefining time a little bit. Slightly off topic, but I think still relevant, is that, you know, sometimes people will see me, it'll be Saturday afternoon or even Saturday night. I'll be sitting down, maybe I'll be at a local tea house I go to or the local cigar shop I go to. I'll have my laptop on, I'll be working on stuff, and people say, "Hey man, you know, your boss is a real jerk making you work on Saturday night." Ha 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 ha. I remember that joke from Entrepreneurship 101. It's real funny. Or what would your clients think if they knew that you were always doing this? And my usual answer is one of two things. Answer number one is, well, my clients aren't here now. I'm not dealing with clients. I'm dealing with this because I feel like doing it. And answer number two is, well, actually, I'm on Tinder.
I love it. I think so many people relate to that, and it's a really important message for people starting out in entrepreneurship. I absolutely remember that. It took a lot within me to stop feeling guilty for not going out on a Friday or Saturday night to hang out with my buddies, going, you know, drinking at 11 to 2 a.m. or 3 a.m. or 4 a.m. in the morning or whatever. And I'm like, I'm young. Am I missing out on my life? I feel guilty and all these things. But then I was like, I'm building my future and what's important to me. And what that looks like now, years later, I'm sitting here in my apartment in, it's actually my partner's apartment in Sofia in Bulgaria. I got up at 4 a.m., so it's about 5:30 a.m. right now. And, you know, people could say, what, you're gonna wake up at 4 a.m.? And I actually choose to wake up at 5 a.m., 5 a.m. club every morning anyway. I get up and do my exercises and that kind of thing. But I know, like, this afternoon, I'm going to take the afternoon off. Last week, I was over in Italy. Last month, we spent the week kiteboarding in Morocco, my girlfriend and I. It was awesome. And this is, like, for me, I'm living my dream. And when my clients see that now, and I work with the clients that are going to see that and go, wow, Daniel, that's awesome that you just work when it is that you want. They don't necessarily, and if they're not in the entrepreneurial world, they don't necessarily see that, okay, I'm working on a Saturday night, or I'm waking up really early in the morning. They just see the time that I'm taking off. The ones, yeah, they're like what you mentioned, are going, wow, you're working at all of that time, and like it's supposed to be a public holiday today or whatever. But I think the message that I like to portray is going, the idea is to enjoy the time that it is that you have available,
right,
and choose to experience it the way that you want. And that's not defined by what time of the day it is or what day of the week it is or whether it's a public holiday. I believe public holidays haven't been designed for entrepreneurs. They've been designed for people that are stuck in jobs, if we want to use that language. So I don't care what day it is. I do what it is that I like when I like, and yeah, I give myself permission to enjoy it that way.
Well, you know, there are some weekdays that I have nothing major due and I don't have anything on my schedule or whatever, so I don't start till noon.
Perfect.
Yeah, and so you know why, because I can. And another point I make to folks is, all right, you with your 9-to-5 job that protects your work-life balance, you ever need a root canal before? And they'll say, well, yeah, well, you know, and you know what happens when you need a root canal? That's when the tooth is dying and there's that pain shooting up into your jaw that no painkiller can do anything about. The only solution is to have it drilled out. That's the only way to make the pain stop. So if somebody's in some structured environment where they have to request time off, they're going to go to their boss and they're going to say, I'm literally ready to rip half my face off, and then get some lecture of, well, what about covering the team? We have this project, and what would your coworkers think if you were just ducking out in the middle of the day to handle personal stuff? Can't you see the dentist on the weekend? Yeah, there's this one job I had when I was in corporate. I swear to God, this supervisor I had, this mythical thing called the weekend, where apparently everything else except the job happens. Yeah. It's just unbelievable. So you can live in an environment, but I can tell you as I sit here right now, my teeth are feeling fine. Yeah, let's say I wake up tomorrow morning and I feel like I'm ready to just grab half my face and rip it off because one of them decided to die on me. I'll be in an endodontist chair tomorrow afternoon getting it taken care of.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that right there, and just that those examples of being able to ride the flexibility curve are what carry me through during the really blah times that we all experience now and again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. So so part of what I'm picking up here is the idea of switching time from a physical reality into a psychological state instead. So just tell us, why is that so important? And how do we kind of go about doing that to actually make that switch? Because it's easy to say, oh, I'll just create time as an experience. But meanwhile, you're getting all five of your doors pounded down.
Yeah. Yeah, well, going back to what you just mentioned about creating that choice, we wonder why we don't have, well, it goes much deeper, but talking about boundaries and personal boundaries when, you know, one of the big objections why I think most people don't experience the time they want it is because they're feeling under pressure or their ability or inability to say no. And that scenario that you just painted out there, it's so true. Employers expecting so much and saying, well, you have to do this, you have to do that, and showing up and going, oh yeah, I have to, okay, I've got no time for myself. But when we come back and we've rebuilt, and this is a whole nother conversation on self-esteem triad, and rebuilt our own abilities to communicate our needs and to be able to communicate strong boundaries and say, well, I need to really look after myself right now, this is what I'm going to do, and if you're not going to respect it, I'm not your slave to show up here and do that. And we don't see enough of that. And I think we're seeing more of that in the business world, in the employment world. But the people that aren't bringing that are going to be stuck in that system, believing they don't have enough time, they don't have enough choice, they don't have enough control over what their future is, what's painted in their future. And I think it's a really important conversation to be having when it comes to entrepreneurship, to be able to develop those personal boundaries, and especially coming back to this conversation with time. It must be one of the biggest criteria. One of the main criteria is being able to know what our own personal boundaries are, what we're going to tolerate and what we're not going to tolerate, and how it is that we're going to show up and interact with others. And then that gives us choice to go, well, now I'm taking responsibility for the time that I have and how I'm going to best, going back to the old language of how I'm going to use it, how I'm going to experience it, and what I'm going to do to shape this part of my life right now.
Yeah.
So going to your question and bringing it into a psychological state, it's really important because when time is a commodity, it's a resource, it's external to us. So we can't see each other in the camera right now, but if you imagine, take your hand and put it out in front of you, that's where time is placed for most people.
Yeah, right in front of me. Like, yeah, like I'm sitting in a dark room, resting my eyes in a posture that, believe me, is not my media pose. I don't do these for 45 minutes to an hour so I can sit up uncomfortably. That's just not how it is, because in real mastermind conversations, you're not staring into a webcam for 45 minutes. That's one of the parts of our brand of this show. But yeah, I'm looking straight ahead, and you know what I see is I see in my email the application you sent when you requested to be on this show.
Yeah,
that's what I see. That's what I see. So what? And then there's also a tab open because I was in my Facebook group while I was waiting for you to log in. I think I have like four separate tabs for my email because I keep forgetting I already have one open. And I see a LinkedIn. I see my Instagram and a couple others that we're not going to tell the kids about. And I think somewhere and I think somewhere I was watching cat videos. I think this one is actually cat videos. I'm not sure. But the point is, these are all things that are clearly defined. And if I hold my hand out in front of them, what I'm actually seeing is I'm seeing my five fingers holding up and they're partially blocking my view. That's what I'm seeing. Mm.
The picture that you're painting sounds very busy there.
Yeah.
It sounds like you got a lot going on.
Uh-huh.
So that's where most people put their time. Their time when it's a resource, it's external. Now, nothing external to us, we have control over. We can't influence it when it's external to us. So when we look at time and the relationship with time is an internal experience, now we have influence over it. we can impact it. We have control. I don't know whether the right language is we can control it, but we can decide what our experience of it's going to be. And therefore, we can bring personal responsibility to it. Because when it's external, you know, we can have excuses. We can blame others for it, blame the scenario, blame the situation. We can bring judgment to it. That thing happened, so therefore I have to do this, like the stories we're sharing earlier. When we bring it internal to us, now we have some influence over it. We can decide how we're going to experience it, and we can do something about it. And I think that's the number one important switch to going, okay, what if time is not a commodity, a resource? It's an experience, and it's an experience within us, and it's our relationship with it. That's the number one reason why I made that switch and why I think it's a huge switch that's making a big impact for many people.
Exactly. So I'm going to cite two concepts from my book, Groundhog Day is an Event, Not a Business Strategy, and put these together. The first is in the mindset section, the S chapter. One of the things I mention is that, you know how every cloud has a silver lining? Well, you should invest in that. You should invest in that silver lining because it's a precious metal. So let's look at this whole COVID thing, whatever you think of it. One of the silver linings is that companies that had been unduly, in my view, resistant to the idea of people working remotely or working hybrid, were now put in a situation where they're given a choice. It's like, your people will either work from home or you will cease operations. There are no other choices. So they had to send the employees home with their laptops and have them log in through VPNs. That's the only way they could stay in business. And you know, to this day, we're 3.5 years later, a lot of times I'll call in someplace for customer service and it's still the same customer service I'm used to, but you do hear the dog running in the background. So that's one thing. And you know, and when you're working remotely, working from home, working hybrid or what have you, that can be a benefit to you when you merge the next topic. I cite a study in the book, and this is one of several studies that all say substantially the same thing, but they looked at that 9-to-5 Monday through Friday office worker in an environment that did not necessarily require them to be in that spot to do their job. And they determined that of the 8 hours, not including the lunch and the mandatory breaks, the 8 hours that were actually the work hours, they spent on average 2 hours and 53 minutes engaged in activities that benefited the company's bottom line and returned on investment in their salaries. Where was the rest of the time going? Bullshit meetings, spending a half hour crafting an email lest you offend some snowflake in the C-suite by not being obsequious enough. Office politics, water cooler, and the thing on Friday morning where by lunchtime, you actually already have all your work done and you could go home, but now you got to sit there and pretend like you're busy for 4 hours.
Right.
Which I remember when I was in corporate, that Friday afternoons were the absolute worst because I was one of those people. By Friday morning, I was done for the week. All my deliverables were in, all my boxes were checked. So, I mean, what are you going to do? So, now you take that person who's not to need to be in that situation and you move them remote. Now they may spend about 3 hours on their workday. Now the other 5 hours, what is it spent on? Running errands, taking the kids to school, dropping them off. If you're homeschooling, couple hours a day, and I'll get to that in a second, that you're helping the kids study. I think I said laundry. That's a big one. Preparing dinner. Maybe watching some garbage noontime stay-at-home TV, who knows? But somewhere in there, there's 2 hours and 54 minutes where you're going to return the investment. And you might return more investment because before that 2 hours and 53 minutes started, you didn't spend an hour and a half sitting in traffic on a roadway that outside of rush hour only takes you 20 minutes. I mean, here's another study that showed that based on the average commute time here in the United States, if you're commuting from your home to an office, whatever your salary is and you divide it by 2080 to figure out your hourly rate, it just went down by like $1.20 an hour just on the commute. And so when you're not commuting, you're also not worrying about clothes. You're not worrying about packing a lunch or buying a lunch. You're not worried about parking your car. And so many places will have parking lots and then they'll still charge your own employees. Or you're not worried about trying to mesh your travel with public transportation. All this stuff is out of the way. So already you're starting the day winning, not losing. So we've already taken time and we've moved it into a different type of experience. Instead of spending an hour and a half taking a 20-minute trip, knowing that if you get into work at 8:01, your boss is going to pull you aside and spend 20 more minutes lecturing you on your lack of punctuality. You just log in at 8 o'clock. You might wake up at 7:59, but you're ready to go.
Yeah.
Now let's merge that to the educational system. Institutionalized education, whether it's your public school, your charter school, your private school, your parochial school, what have you, has the students go to a building and sit in these things called classes. And each class is usually somewhere between 42 and 47 minutes long. And during that 42 to 47 minutes, you'll focus on one subject. Then the bell will ring and you'll have 5 minutes to literally run, even though you're not allowed to run, but you have to get to your locker, switch books, and make it to your next class before the bell rings. Otherwise, you'll get detention. And then you can sit for another 47 minutes. Effective homeschooling takes the average student, it's funny, just a little under 3 hours a day. Here's a simple reason why. In institutionalized learning, you might not need to spend 47 minutes in your history class because it's an easy subject for you. You read the assignments, you take the tests, it's an easy A because you love it and you're good at it. But then go to your math class and you're not mathematically inclined. I'm speaking of myself here. And you're spending those 40 minutes struggling on a subject you hate only to get homework that you can hate some more. With homeschooling, if you only need 5 minutes for the history, that's all you spend. And then the rest of your history can be reading on your own time if you enjoy history. Or if you don't enjoy history, but you're good at it, you get it out in 5 minutes. If you need 3 hours for the math, there's 3 hours there. They have the tutorials. They have the workbooks. Some homeschooling programs have the thing where you can chat with a tutor. So what you can do is you can take the time you need for the studies and optimize it toward where you need the support in the classes that are most aligned with your brilliance and your passion and what you believe you're going to do when you grow up. So that's why it takes less time. So in both of these examples, I just want to get your thoughts. Have I articulated the idea of taking time and moving it from being a construct or a thing and making it an experience instead?
I love what you're sharing. In both those scenarios, we can see why people are so time poor, because the structures and the institutions that were created that operate our current society are teaching and demonstrating and forcing people into a scarcity mindset. And you got to do this and do this, and you got a lack of time and show up in this kind of way. And like, it's so challenging to have a different experience than being stressed and overwhelmed and busy and unfulfilled and feeling like we're being forced and told how it is that we got to behave.
Right.
Versus what you just shared there is creating a different approach. And I've got no idea about homeschooling. I don't have kids.
Right.
I would imagine that a lot of school is about socialization, but you can bring so much other choice and into how you're going to recreate those things that are important. And I love the message that you're sharing there is making it more individualized in
right.
a way that works for us personally. And so my thoughts on that is going, understanding what we want and how it is that we want to experience life. Like, you know, even just the simple view of introversion versus extroversion. Some people are going to want to go to the office and hang out and get together and talk.
No,
with you, so
no. Go ahead.
Yeah, and other people don't want to do that. They'd rather be at home, read a book, and
yes.
I'm the same. People go, Dan, you're such a. When I tell people that I'm introverted, people are like, what? No way. You know, I'll get on stage and I run facilitations and workshops and whatever. And I'm like, well, I can be confident and introverted. I'd rather be at home and reading my book and hanging out and doing my work. And I go out and I'm going to choose when I want to be around people. But if I had to be in a job where there's a huge office and it's so draining for me. That's not the experience that I want to create, because I'm being around. It's too much energy for me to handle all the time. I need to prepare and I can't prepare for that. day in and day out. And I right. think it's the same for children as well. It's important. We need to socialize kids. Of course we do. So that's I think, is a downside for homeschooling. But you can recreate that in the way that children want to do it. And so it ties totally into going, well, what's the experience that we want to create based on what our values are? And I think the big point here is we don't manage time. No one manages time. We manage decisions. And in this world, people haven't been taught how to manage decisions, make decisions in the face of challenge, in the face of adversity, based on what's important to them and what they value. I think so much has been taken care of within our societies and like almost being influenced or persuaded or being told this is the rule, this is how we have to do it, that our decision-making ability hasn't been developed enough to then make these decisions based on what's important to us. I think that's such a big part that we could look into and explore more to really create a different experience.
Right. Well, let's address the homeschooling thing a little bit more, because I don't have kids either, but I have a lot of people who are my friends who are within my age cohort who do have kids. So the socialization issue, contrary to some popular belief, has been addressed. And let me give you a few examples. One is you are seeing more and more group homeschooling. So you get a few parents whose kids are all substantially the same age. And the kids get together every day and they do their homeschooling together. They form their own little classes. They're each working independently, but they're in a group. That's one thing. Another is most school districts are required to allow homeschooled kids within the district to participate in their extracurricular activities. So if you want to homeschool and also be on the football team, you can do that. That's another thing. A third is there are a lot of institutions that are already out there that allow for socialization, like Scouts, Girl Scouts, Boy Scouts, the Little League team, the chess club, classes at the skating rink. There's so many things that kids can do. And what we see in homeschooling is something you see more, I think a little bit more, I don't have the numbers on this, but I think anecdotally, it's a little bit more in rural areas. And what's great about that is the kids are spending their 2 to 3 hours on a computer doing their mandatory lessons to comply with the state's education requirements. They're doing the homework. They're taking the tests. They're certifying that they're such and such grade level, yada, yada, yada. And then they're also spending a couple hours. Maybe they're out with dad learning how to work on cars, or maybe they're with mom learning gardening and farming. Maybe they have a lot of animals, so now they're learning animal husbandry. Perhaps they have horses, so they're working on their equestrian skills. So these are also educational things, and they are experiences. So now we're taking that time. We're making them sit in classrooms for 42 to 47 minutes in those arbitrarily defined blocks, and now we're redefining time as an experience and actually putting more into the same amount of time.
It's so good. I love it. I'm just sitting there imagining how that would look differently, because one of the things that maybe call me an anti-conformist, I have a bit of a rebel nature in me. The establishments and the way that I feel like people are almost herded through like sheep, and it's a one size fits all approach for people.
Yeah.
And what you're describing is not that.
Right.
I do wonder, though, you know, in terms of, I'd be totally open for it. I'd love to see what happened. But if we weren't conditioned through these traditional schooling methods, it probably wouldn't work. And the work society that we have, so we'd have to create something else, and then we'd have this ripple effect, would have a totally different culture and society.
Yeah, you do.
I love the idea.
Yeah, you do have a point. And, you know, there are some things where you do have to go to a discrete place and you have to work from 9 to 5 or whatever your shift is. For example, if you work in healthcare, well, the doctor's office has got to be open. You can't do doctor work on Zoom. You can't do surgery on Zoom. You got to actually go to a hospital to get surgery done. So there are examples. If you're in public safety, like police, fire departments, the ambulance, that's shift work. If you are industrial, you're working in a factory, you're doing engineering work, that's shift work. But these are all choices that people make. And some people thrive within that structure. I believe I never put somebody down because they have some job that they go to where they work 40 hours a week and they spend the entire time sitting in a cubicle looking at their computer working on spreadsheets for two reasons. Number one, there are people out there who love to work on spreadsheets for 40 hours a week. And number two, we need them because the other stuff isn't possible without them.
Yeah. Yeah, I absolutely agree. It blows my mind that people love doing spreadsheets and all those number work, but I've met many of them myself and it just lights them up. It's what they love to do. And that's what the only people that I question, like, why are you doing that, are the ones that are complaining that they don't want to be doing it. And I'm like, if you hate it, do something different. That's your choice.
You know,
why are you doing that? Because I have to. They don't know any other way.
Yeah, you know what I say to that? I say, let's say, for example, you want to change careers or you want to move to a different part of the country. I moved all the way across the United States 10 years ago because I wanted a different lifestyle in a different place. And I look at it and somebody might say, well, you know, I'd love to move to Las Vegas, but, you know, I'd have to find a job there or start a business that allows me to work wherever I want to. Then there's a matter that, you know, we need to move at a certain time of year because we don't want to interrupt the kids' school year. My spouse has to find a job. You know, we have to sell the house. We have to liquidate the assets. Lots of things. That would take me 3 years to do. And you know what I say to them? I say, all right, so now you know it takes 3 years. Take your first step today, because if you wait till tomorrow, it's going to take you 3 years in one day.
Yeah, that's what I say. Just do it.
Yeah. If it's going to take 3 years, it's going to take 3 years. Let's not argue that point. That's real. But let's now assign the time to using those 3 years to take the necessary steps rather than spend 2 years figuring out how we're going to make the 3 years work and then doing the 3 years.
Oh, that's one of, I know that that's a whole nother conversation, but it's one of the biggest things that comes up when I was coaching an entrepreneurship, people trying to figure it all out in the future. And they're wondering why they're overwhelmed and procrastinating because they're trying to figure out step five before they're taking the first step. Jeez, that holds back a lot of people. But then often when you take the first step, it's half the time than what you anticipated. It's nowhere near as long as what it is that you're creating in your mind, for sure.
I mean, I spent years figuring out how the hell am I going to get out of Pittsburgh. And then I told this story on other podcasts. For our listeners, go to our history, go to the place where we list the guests, and find my interview with Daniel Jackson. I cover it there. I actually remember this one. And I tell the story about I decided to move to Las Vegas because I had a dream about something. I'll let our listeners, after you listen to this one, go listen to that one. It's fascinating. So I had this dream and I woke up from it. And then I realized, you know what? I got to go. I got to get the hell out of here. So I looked at it and I said, well, today is July. It was July 7th. I remember the date. It was July 7th. And I'm thinking, okay, so what would it take for me to get out of Pittsburgh and get to Las Vegas? And I realized that there were really two things holding me up. One was that my lease on my apartment ran till October 31st. So I answered that one. Okay, target date November 1st. I'll just stay here till the lease is up. That actually buys me some time so I can do this methodically. And the second item was I'm going to need some cash for the move. Well, I'm an entrepreneur. I created the cash. So a lot of it's just a matter of problem solving. And I've been in places, in fact, recently, where I've looked at problems and I've said, I can't see a solution to this. But the thing is I found the solution because I decided to look for it.
I think there's three big reasons why people, and I say people as a generalization in this world, there's three big reasons, and then a fourth that I've noticed as well, why we're not getting everything that it is that we want in life. The first one is, and I kind of hear it, is it's too stupid. Too stupid to create the business or live the life or create the income, whatever it is. And let's face it, some people don't have the brains, but I think that's rare. Like, you know, less than like 3% or 5% of the population. Because like, even the so-called, in quotation marks, the stupid ones are still making it big. So I'm like, okay, what's your excuse then? You know, like if you're not too stupid, then there's another category, which is too arrogant. I think arrogance is an emotional weakness. You know, people need to be right about everything. This is me. I'll put my hand up very quickly for this one. It took me until I turned about 30 that I was too arrogant, thinking that I had everything figured out. And you know, I think actually it was starting business, getting into the entrepreneurial world, to realize that I didn't have all my shit figured out and I needed to do better. Because you know, for me to think I knew better than someone that had already had success, that was total arrogance. And I just say to people now, good luck reinventing the wheel while others are simply just doing what works, to find out what works and do that. I think the main category why people aren't getting what it is that they want is too lazy. It's the biggest killer. Like, we have all the resources in the world. Most people just can't be bothered. It's just like what you're mentioning. Oh, it'll take 3 years. It'll take a whole lot of work. But I'm like, is what you really want worth the effort for you? And for most people, it's the inaction. The inaction screams aloud no, because I'd rather be comfortable than just facing a little bit of discomfort. Yeah. Being comfortable in that discomfort. And I think it's the silent killer of people. And we're always fighting a battle. If we're fighting the battle out and striving for more to really go after what it is that we want, that's a battle. Uh-huh. If we're sitting here and doing nothing, now that becomes an internal battle with ourselves for settling for mediocrity. And then we talk about depression or you know, these mental states. People aren't wired to have no problems. We are wired to have problems. The human brain needs a challenge. So if we're not going to go out and face the world and create challenges that are worth having, we'll just create internal challenges. And I think that's a big reason why we've got the, you know, these, I don't want to minimize the challenges that we have, but they're not really quality problems.
Yeah. You know, it just occurred to me while I was listening to you that I think sometimes we create problems because other people have them. So going back to the story of when I looked at my life and I said, you know what, I've been thinking about getting to Las Vegas for all these years. We're just going to do it. And I figured, okay, lease ends October 31st. The target date for move is November 1st. That's fine. That way I don't have to pay any lease break fees and I can do it methodically. Second is I need $5,000. Well, I found two projects, got my $5,000. Now, remember earlier in our conversation, I said that one of the things that might cause it to take people 3 years is kids, spouse, disposing of real property, those types of things. Mm. It's like, I don't have kids. I don't have a spouse. I don't own a house. So psychologically, there's programming that tells me that doing this is hard because for other people, it's hard. But these problems don't exist for me. So all I have to do essentially is stay single and don't buy a house. Now, ironically, I ended up finding a girlfriend who was supposed to move out and follow me here, but you know, it didn't work out, but that's a different story. And you know, just things happen. But even that was solvable because for a while there, she said, okay, if you want to move to Las Vegas, I'll come with you. Well, thank God she didn't. That's another story as well. But, you know, that's another case where I made it work for me. And I had the presence of mind to say, what's most important here? A 2-month-old relationship? Is this a perfect relationship? Am I already pricing wedding rings? I wasn't. So I had to look at it objectively. And I just laid it out. I said, bear in mind that I'm going to Las Vegas after November. So one of three things can happen. We can play until I leave. You can come with me when I do, or we can end it now.
Mm.
And I essentially made it her decision. And the way I viewed it is I was giving her the agency and her the power to make the decision that made the best sense for her. Because I had the confidence, Las Vegas is a big city. There's lots of women here. Believe me. Finding women has not been one of my problems since I got here. So not to turn this into that type of conversation, but it's reality.
Yeah, it's a really wonderful demonstration of making decisions in the face of challenge. I think navigating uncertainty, it must be one of the key criteria to success. I love that conversation. And you know what you're talking about before and you're referring to is around not knowing or creating the problems. I think a lot of the creating the problems that we have is based off an ignorance. an ignorance on, I don't know how to figure it out yet. That's a problem. Therefore, I won't do anything about it. And I say ignorance with respect because we're all ignorant of what we don't know until we know, right? But it's people like you and I and our listeners that are going out and doing amazing things in their life. They're the ones that are different, that are actively going to seek the change that they need at a rapid pace, a rapid change in their thinking and their approach to life to figure it out. And as we do it, we realize it's not actually as hard as what previously we're perceiving it to be, because we couldn't see any other way. We didn't have the fundamental knowledge or perception or perspective to go, oh, we just do that. Anything we've done in the past, we look back at it and go, okay, well, that's probably pretty easy. I know what to do and I'll go and take care of it. But you can join the dots going backwards. You can't join the dots going forward. We just got to go and start creating some dots and figuring it out along the way. I have a lot of respect for people doing that because it does require courage. I think it's awesome. When you show up with courage, you be brave. That's where we grow and we really see the change in our life. And we can do it so quickly when we choose to step in.
I think there's one more thing that comes up, and it has to do with how we're socialized, something that we get through the education system and certain mores. It's the idea that once you make a decision, you stick with it because otherwise you're either a quitter or a flip-flopper. I'll give you an example that everybody I think can relate to it one reason or another. Like you can take your pick, pick your least favorite politician, whoever it is. So here in the United States, look at the plethora of candidates for the presidency who are now competing in primaries. You can pick, go to the one you hate the most. Find some position that's in their platform right now. And 9 out of 10, you'll be able to rewind to some previous office they had or some previous campaign they ran where they had the opposite position. Mm-hmm. Now, look at the candidate you like. I bet you find the same thing. So remember from 2004 for our United States listeners and George W. Bush called John Kerry a flip-flopper because he said that he supported something till he didn't or something like that. I can't remember what the issue was. And so basically it created a false impression that changing your mind on something because maybe society evolved, policy evolved, realities evolved, you changed your position on an issue or decided, I remember what it was. John Kerry said, I supported the war until I didn't. Well, I know a lot of people that thought back, after 9/11, that it was a really freaking good idea to go to Afghanistan and nail those sons of bitches who blew up our buildings. And hey, since we're there, Iraq's been a problem for 20 years. Let's take care of them too. Let's make a clean slate and solve all our problems. Now you can look at this retrospectively 20 years later and say, why the hell did we do that? So, but in 2003, you thought it was a good idea. In 2023, you don't think it was such a great idea. You're a flip-flopper. No, no. You saw events progress. You saw actions, reactions, consequences, and follow-ups. And you recognize after subsequent learning that new information gave you a different position and a different opinion. So translate that to entrepreneurial and executive decision-making. And this is something that I struggled with when I was in corporate. It seems like every single time they tell us to do something and then 2 hours later, they're saying, oh no, don't do that. Do this instead. Don't, no. And I'm thinking, well, you just told me to do this. Well, I'd get real mad over this. And I recognize now with the value of hindsight that what was really going on is something that's key to entrepreneurial and executive decision-making. Having the courage, the fortitude, and the emotional intelligence to make a decision, and then a few steps down the road, make another decision. Because the world's not going to stay static and give you the same set of factors when you made the original decision. Things are going to move on with or without you.
It's such an important point. I see that through the lens of behavioral flexibility. And it's something that we don't have until we develop it. I think a lot of the population's lacking it, and something that I'm always reminding myself of when things, especially when things are going wrong or not the way that I want it, to bring behavioral flexibility. I think it takes a lot of courage. It takes a lot of ownership and responsibility to go, okay, this is not how I want it. I'm going to change it. But then when other people are involved, to also go, you know what, I wasn't quite on the mark there, or we maybe it will be admitting wrong. And I'm not a big fan of necessarily right and wrong. I think it's, are we doing what it is that we need to do to get the outcomes that it is that we want? And sometimes the outcomes change, the goalposts change. I know that's really challenging for a lot of people. A metaphor I like to use, and staying on the topic of war, is a homing missile. You know, if you send off a homing missile and it's targeted, it's reassessing its path at every moment along the way so it hits the target. If it's taking a little bit off course, it's like, okay, recorrect. Nothing is fixed. It's the same with autopilot on a plane. No, it's never fixed. It's moving all the way until it hits the destination. And I think when we bring that approach to, say, business or life or relationships or whatever, it's recalibrating, redirecting on every moment, because every influencing factor is going to change the outcome of where we're going. And if we want to hit that outcome, we have to do what it is that you're suggesting there to keep reassessing, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And so now what we've done is we've actually applied decision-making and problem-solving to turning time into an experience, because with decision-making and problem-solving, time will take you on.
Yeah.
And that it's a matter of taking that same power that we covered in the first half and applying it to that. And unfortunately, I mentioned the first half, we're done with the second half. So we're basically done here. But I do want to give our listeners a resource that I myself am going to take up on, because this sounds really good. I want you all to visit Daniel Lawson's website. It's parallaxtransformations.com. Now, stay with me, because I need to spell that for you. You can come to our website and go into show notes. The link is there. You're covered if you just want something to click on. But I got to spell parallax for you, because he added an extra letter or two. It's P-A-R-A-L-L-A-X-X, then the word transformations.com. So two L's and two X's in the word parallax, the way he spells it. And when you get there, you're going to see the opportunity to claim your PDF copy of Daniel's book that I mentioned at the very beginning. It's called Three Toxic Lies That Keep You Busy, Stressed, and Unfulfilled, where he delves into the issue of time in greater detail and also expounds upon a few of the other topics we covered here today. It's an ebook. Go get it. It's there for you right now at parallaxtransformations.com. And with that, Daniel Lawson, thank you so much for being with us today. It's been an honor, and believe me, an education.
Yeah, you're so welcome. You're so welcome. I'm really pumped to share that book. The PDF is available for free. Go and grab it. It's about to go for print. So if anyone does want the hard copy, that's for sale as well. I am going to be starting to phase out the PDF. So anyone that wants it, go and grab it as soon as possible. Otherwise, it's just going to be for payment. It'll be on Amazon, distributed around the world. It's got heaps of really cool activities in there, and the how to go and start changing time mindset and your relationship with time as of today, as of tomorrow, take the action. And it's been transformative for so many people. So really pumped, really excited to share that with as many people that want it and make a change in their life.
All right. So if you're listening to this in 2023, there's a PDF there. If you're listening to this 3 years later, you might have to pay $15, but believe me, it's worth the investment. So again, thank you so much.
You're so welcome. Thank you.
We trust you enjoyed today's episode of the Business Creators Radio Show. Check out our previous and upcoming episodes on our website at www.businesscreatorsradioshow.com. While you're there, be sure to subscribe via your favorite network so you get fresh episodes delivered straight to you. Until next time, have a great day. Take care.